Okay, good morning, Shalom Aleichem. Welcome back. Parsha Shmini, 5, 7, 8, 4. To go, five thoughts, reflections on the Parsha. Shmini, almost every single year, is really after Pesach. And all the Divrei Torah that I have on Shmini are like connected to Yom HaAtzmaut, Yom HaZikaron. It's the mindset, which is amazing. Your mindset is so different at different points during the year. I was just thinking about this, just like, I don't know, I was wherever I was driving the other day, just thinking about how like the Jewish calendar sets up, hey, your mood is shifted and changed a little bit, altered based on the schedule, but just like where you're thinking and where your mind is going is very much related to the time of the year that we're in. And is Shmini a looking towards Pesach or a Shmini post-Pesach, more of a freedom type of experience, thinking about Eretz Yisrael in a different way or a yearly way, as opposed to this year, just caught my attention this year. I'd like to start. Ari Maievski loves talking about the his unique trivia for every single parsha, and there's a few different anomalies within Shmini related to the trup. There's a mercha kfula. We talked to talk about last week. Mendy was talking about the tzav, and in tzav you have the shalshelet. There's four shalshelets in the entire Torah, and people have a lot of drashos about the shalshelet. It represents a halachic or a pause, a hesitation in the reading itself, because the four people that had a shalshelet reflected some type of pause in their life. Yosef HaTzadik with Potiphar, maybe I should be involved. Lot, should I leave Sodom and leave all my money behind or be saved? Eliezer, Eved Avraham, maybe did not want to find a wife for Yitzchak because he had his own daughter that he thought was a appropriate match. And Moshe Rabbeinu, when he slaughtered the korbanos for Aaron, essentially he was telling Aaron, you're going to be the next Kohen Gadol. And there's a personal hesitation there because I couldn't become the Kohen Gadol and not him. So Ari and I were talking at Sunday, it's carpooling play dates, and he said it's the Shmini gets the short change here because you have something called a Mercha Kfula. I'm not going to attempt to say it for you, but you have a Mercha Kfula, which is very, very rare also. Maybe there's four or five in the entire Torah. And then you have something else. You have a word here that has two trup on the same word. And where is that? By the way, the pasuk says, "Vayikrivu lifnei Hashem esh zarah, Nadav and Avihu brought a foreign fire. Asher lo," on that word "lo," did not command him them. On the word "lo," you have the mercha kfula. And the Mefarshim talk about what does that Mercha Kefula really represents. Nadav and Avihu eventually are killed. They die. The Torah says here they die al Kiddush Hashem, which is pretty interesting. What does that mean? They died al Kiddush Hashem. So it depends on really how you understand the death of Nadav and Avihu, and we're going to elaborate on that. I would say very, very shortly. Here, where is the pasuk? Yeah.
Where did the trump originate?
So the trump originate from Moshe Rabbeinu. They come from their halacha Moshe Sinai. The trump in the Torah come from Moshe Rabbeinu. Vayikra Moshe. They die. Moshe says the following: Vayomer Moshe el Aharon, hu asher diber Hashem lemor. Bikrovaya Kadesh. Moshe tells Aaron after his sons shockingly and suddenly die together on the same day, on a day of celebration. Right? A day of celebration, his two sons die. And he says, these two were chosen to die on this day, and they're Mekadeshim Shemayim in their death. And they're going to be honored before the entire people. Aaron's reaction is Vayidom Aharon. Vayidom means he was what? Silence. What word do we use for quiet? Go back to your lunchroom days and you're trying to get sheket. Sheket bevakasha. So vayidom, yeah, very good, very good. So I saw this in the name of Revolvi. So sheket means and honey Aaron now. So sheket means you have nothing to say. You have nothing to say. So you're sitting b'sheket, and it's nice to sometimes sit with somebody b'sheket in the car. Yeah, you feel so comfortable. You don't have to be yapping the entire time. B'sheket, but vayidom means you have a lot to say. There's a lot of questions. There's a lot of kashas. There's a lot of things, and you choose. It's a quiet out of emuna. There's an acceptance with this vayidom, and that's what Aaron, a Kohen, is really expressing over here. Vayikra Moshe el Mishael ve'el Tzafan b'nei Uziel dot Aaron. Moshe then calls to his two nephews, Mishael and El Tzafan, Vayomer Alehem, and he says to them, Kirvu Se'u Esachechem Me'es Pnei HaKodesh. Go close and remove the bodies. What was left of the bodies? Very little. The Gemara elaborates on this and says there's very, very little left of their bodies after they encountered this Esh Zara. Please take them out of the Pnei HaKodesh, this holy place, and remove them, michutz lamachana, and you're going to bury them outside the machana. That's where, if you look historically, it's not always true, but historically, they tried to make cemeteries where? On the outskirts of the community. Sometimes communities outgrew themselves, and then the cemetery became part of the community. Right. Rarely, Krakow is like an exception to this rule where it's like by the shul. I don't know. It's like if we had to use the backyard, have a board meeting. What should the backyard be used for? It's like the Ramah shul had a board meeting and they said, we're going to use it for a cemetery, a playground, an expansion, cemetery. The board meeting's next week. We can, Peter, you bring this up. So it's a Christian, really? It's Christian?
Oh, yes.
That's interesting. Okay. No, they created that shul, I think, afterwards. The one that we went through recently? I think that was created afterwards. But that's more... At one point, that cemetery in Lakewood that we went to was on the outskirts. Now it's not. Now it's... Because everything is Lakewood there. But on these words, hirvu, you have two trump. You have a tlisha and you have a gershayim. A tlisha and a gershayim. You'll ask somebody else to say for you. But what is the meaning behind this? So the question was raised by Rav Sarutskin in Ozayim the Torah. And he wants to know what exactly is happening here with this double trump on one word, which is pretty rare. Pretty rare. Kirvu. Right, come close. So he notices that when Moshe asks Mishael and El Tzafan to bury Nadav and Avihu, he calls out to them not once but twice. Vayikra Moshe El Tzafan bnei Uziel, Mishael El Tzafan bnei Uziel, but Aaron. Vayomer alehem. Vayikra Vayomer. Why? Why would he need to call out twice to them? To mitzvah, right? To bury your cousins, to bury Jewish people that have died. So everyone was in a state of shock, right? Nobody wanted to get close to this, number one. So that's natural. People generally are in a state of shock. Kol hakavod to the Chevra Kedisha, everyone, a lot of people are generally uncomfortable with this. And we need people in the community that are comfortable with being involved with the burial of our own. That's natural. That comes to everybody, no matter what type of death this is going to be. But secondly, says Rav Sarutskin, Here specifically, they were afraid that this fire would go out to them as well, that it wouldn't be limited to another. Who says that, like, we're going to go in and we're going to be okay? Moshe, you said that's enough for me? No. So they were afraid for their own lives that if they were going to go into the Kodesh Kodashim at this very moment on Aleph Nisan, something very bad was going to happen to them. So they needed a little extra motivation to go in. Vayikra, Vayomer. That's why in the word Kirvu, come close, we're acknowledging that there's two different types of hesitation that are happening here. A natural one that we all have, and a second one out of fear for their physical safety at this time. And I think this is an unbelievable idea, just the sensitivity of the and the carefulness of reading the pshat with the trup here gives us a very beautiful understanding of what was happening at this moment, right? Whereas everybody is a mitzvah to bear. Who's going to run to do this? And I was thinking, I saw this Rav Saretzkin, and I was thinking of what just happened in Teaneck just a few nights ago. In Teaneck, just a few nights ago, there was an event for Zaka. What I'm saying here is not going to be a surprise. Everyone knows. It made the front page of the Jewish press. Okay, well, wish the Yashar Koach to the editor of the Jewish press. He lives here. He lives here. Yeah. I saw Ari. Yeah.
Yeah, there. That's the picture that's on the front page.
Oh, really? Okay, good. So what did Zaka do? Right? This all started because Zaka was coming to share their story. Zaka, what most of the workers of Zaka experienced, or all of them experienced, that those days and months following October 7th were quite literally frightening, and they're having nightmares, and they're all traumatized from this. And part of the reason why they're coming around is not only to fundraise, right? It's to come to talk. It's for them to share, because it's important for most people to share. It's helpful to share the story. And we're living in a world today where if we're not sharing the story, then you know what people are saying anyway? We're liars. It didn't happen. It didn't happen. Right? Michelle and Elzafan, you can argue, were the first members of Zaka. They were afraid. Nonetheless, they took steps forward, maybe with their own physical safety at risk. They had no idea. But nonetheless, they went in and buried what they could. What they could. That's where Zaka started. Because I'm not going to get into the gory details. You can read it. When there is a, you know, no other country probably has a unit, a volunteer unit like this in their country, because this is commonplace in Israel that people think it's okay that you can blow up Jewish people and families and men, women, children, regardless of where they are, in the army, out of the army, civilians, citizens, it doesn't matter. And we needed to react. We need to react. And Zaka was created many years ago to help with the greatest kavod, with kavod ames, chesed shel emes. And they went in with hesitation. On October 7th, speaking to people that lived in the communities in the Gaza envelope, the days after October 7th were just as scary, maybe even scarier, because at those times you knew exactly where the enemy was. You heard them outside your homes. You knew where they were in the city centers. Then you had no idea. Were they hiding in like the miklat in your apartment building? Were they going to pop out of nowhere, you know, hiding in a car? You had no idea where they were. Yet what happened? While everyone else was running to shelter in other parts of the country, Zaka themselves were running in against their own physical safety. Whereas normally people are kirvu, they hesitate to come close to bury the dead in these situations. Zaka themselves are trained to run towards the fire, to run towards the chesed shel emes. And it's a powerful reminder of the uniqueness of the Jewish people. Heim am levadad yishkon. We are a lonely nation. It was only a small reminder of this past week, very much in our backyard, or maybe in our front yard, very much here in Bergen County. And sadly to say, the voices are not dying down, and they're going to continue to be strong, and get louder and louder. And our response needs to be also to stand up and to not back down from these people that are spreading lies about us and spreading really anti-Semitic rhetoric throughout the country. That is thought number one for today. Number two, this is an unbelievable nitziv. And every year, you look at the story of Nadav and Avihu, and you're like, how can this happen? Or how did this happen, let's say. And there's like, I don't know, at this point, there's probably hundreds of different interpretations of what exactly happened with Nadav and Avihu. And I'm going to take you two psukim earlier. Vayichu b'nei Aharon Nadav Avihu ish machtaso. Nadav and Avihu took each, what did they take? Ish machtaso. Maybe should have said, vayichu machtasam, their pans. Why did it say ish, one pan? Vayitznu vahenesh, they placed fire on it. Vayasimu ala ktores, and then they placed the ktores on it. Vayakrivu lifnei Hashem, ish zara, and they placed a foreign fire in it, sher lo tziva usam, which they did not, which they were not commanded. Vayasimu alaha also is inconsistent. Vayasimu alaha, the Torah should have said, Vayasimu alehem, they placed on their, you know, on their pants. What is happening here? So the Nitziv says something really unbelievable. The Nitziv says, I'll get you the language of the Nitziv. Nitziv writes, Alehem Ibailim. It should have said, on their pants, on their fires. And he has other times that that's the language that's used. Venira de Be'emes, Lo Nichna Sushneyem, B'Yishav Adan Zaymzeh. They on their own woke up that morning, Nadav and Avihu separately, with no prior conversations. Each woke up and said, you know what we're going to do today? We're going to bring, I'm going to go in on my own and bring and get so close to Hashem and experience this sublime experience of interacting with Ribono Shel Olam by bringing a Ktores in the Kodesh Kedoshim on the first day of the Chanukah Sanhedrin. And they each had the idea on their own. And the whole morning, they're preparing their Eish, now we'd call it an Eish Zara. That's why the Torah says they prepared it Ish Machtaso. They did it separately. They didn't know that the other one had the same idea in mind. Ish Me'atzmo Lo Notlu Eitza Zemizeh. They didn't talk about this. Mishumachi Keshebo Lifnim, when they like started walking towards the Kodesh HaKadoshim, Umatsu Ze'et Zeh, they're like, wait a minute, you, what? And they quickly figured out what exactly was going on. They said, we can't bring two of these. That wouldn't be appropriate. But what's a natural reaction here? I have an idea. My brother has the same exact idea. And we each want to get the fame and fortune for the idea. You're going to, right? You're going to elbow, for those on the video, I'm elbowing, right? You're elbowing. You're going to elbow the other guy out. You're going to box the other guy out. I want to get, you know, the picture. I want to get the fame from this. I want it to be me. It's my idea. It's my idea. It's my idea. It's my. And then usually happens is someone else sneaks in and takes the idea. But here, what was their response? Wow. Can't believe they had the same idea. Let's go in together and bring one together. Vayasimu alaha. Right? Simu alaha. And they ended up helping each other out by bringing this in. And that's, I thought, really amazing. That's it. Again, what they did was, according to many Mefarshim, was wrong. Was wrong. The Ramban writes, and I think this would dovetail off of the Nitziv, what they didn't do was wrong per se. It was wrong timing. The Ramban writes is what they really were trying to do was is bring the Jewish people to the next level. The Mishkan and the role of Korbanos is to really Hashem interacts with the Jewish people on a midah of rachman. So really make a mistake, you know, you should be punished. Hashem says, bring a korban. So what did the they want to do? They wanted Nadav and Avihu, they wanted to bring the Jewish people to a level where Hashem interacts with us on a level of midas hadin. The people weren't ready for that. Nadav and Avihu were. So by doing that, Hashem said, if you want to interact with me on a midas hadin, then I'm going to take you because people can't, right? L'shitascha, you can't exist. It doesn't work. It doesn't work. But that was their intentions over here. Yeah.
So I think this whole incident, Nadav and Avihu, is my, at least in my mind, this is my question about Sabi 96. You have to be exact, okay? Hashem tells you in the Mishkan, this is what you have to do exactly. You can't deviate. That's why Psalms 96, because it's an exact number. It's exactly what Sab is equal to.
When it comes to commandments, you can't deviate.
You have to basically listen. You can't deviate.
Yeah.
You have to do exactly what you're told.
Yeah. So what's amazing is maybe this helps us understand something else. Very often, the death of the other Avihu are invoked, are quoted in Psukim. Later in Vayikra, Achrei Moshe Bnei Aaron. Later on in Sefer Bamidbar. And every single time they're quoted, the Psukim say the following. I'll give you one example. Vayidaber Hashem Moshe Achrei Moshe Bnei Aaron Mekarv Asam Lefnei Hashem Vayimusu. Hashem speaks to Moshe after the death of the two sons of Aaron. Vayomer Hashem Moshe Daber El Aaron Achicha. Speak to Aaron your brother. So simple understanding of that, speak to Aaron your brother. You're a leader, he's a leader. Don't speak to him as a leader. No. This is Nicham Avinu. Talk to him as your brother. Speak to him. You guys grew up in the same house. You guys played ball together. Speak to him as your brother. That's what he needs right now. Beichar af Hashem b'Moshe, v'yomer halo Aaron achicha. Halevi yadati ki daberi daber hu v'gam hinehu yotzei l'kreisecha. This is in Shmos. Aaron, almost every single time, in the context of Moshe, is say Aaron achicha. Every single time. So you could say that this bridge really underscores the amazing relationship that they had as brothers. And maybe really with the Siv in mind, this underscores the power of the next generation. That Nadav and Avihu, in even Bimosam, Lo Nifradu, Bimosam, they were willing to give up for one another to share this covenant. It did not work out, obviously, the way that they planned. But they were brothers even in their death. And that's a very, I think, powerful idea to think about. Okay, that is thought number two. One was from Kirvu. Two, Trup, hesitation when it comes to death. Number two is Aaron Achicha, Nadav and Avihu, a unique approach to their sin. Okay, Number three for this morning. The pasuk says, "Vayavo Moshe v'Aaron elo moed." Aaron and Moshe go towards the Ohel Moed. This is towards the end, right before. This is like the end. The Jewish people, this is opening day. The Mishkan, Hashem is waiting for the Mishkan to be built. The Jewish people waiting for a few months for the Mishkan to be built. Finally, the day comes. They're celebrating. Moshe and Aaron go into Ohel Moed, and then they come out. They bless the nation. Vayera kvod Hashem el kol ha'am, and everybody sees the kavod Hashem. What does that mean? Everybody sees the kavod Hashem in this moment. A fire comes down from Shemayim in this moment, and they all are blown away. So asks Rav Hirsch, why did Moshe and Aaron need to go into the Ohel Moed first, then come out and then the fire came down. Why can't the fire just come down automatically? Everyone's there. They brought all their kabanos already. They're ready. Everyone's excited. Why do they need to go in and then come out and then it starts? So he says something very simple, but a very profound idea. He says that this teaches us that Shechina doesn't come automatically. People might think that, oh, you do this and this and this, the Shechina comes down, right? The Shechina is not a Lego set, right? It comes to making Lego. They give you like very precise instructions throughout. And when you're finished, look what you have here. That's not enough, right? So after all of that, Moshe and I need to do something in addition, right? We need to be proactive. We want Hashem in our lives. We need to take steps towards that. Towards that interaction. Okay. Also, on this very same pasuk, Rav Sarutskin also says, "Vayar kol ha'am." Sorry, on the next pasuk, "Vateich eiz mifnei Hashem, vatochel al mizbeach." The fire comes down. The fire never stopped. Ela esa ola, it takes up the ola, it's a chalavim and the fats. Vayar kol ha'am, the whole nation sees. Vayaronu. Vayaronu, does that word mean vayaronu? It's not used so often. Gila, rina, ditza, v'chedva. They sang. The reaction of seeing this was they started singing. The Unkula says, chaza kol ama, the whole nation saw this. V'shabachu. They immediately praised Hashem. Vayiplu al pneihem. And they fell on their faces. So Rav Sarutskin says, naturally, this was unnatural for them to do. Why is that? The Jewish people are very accustomed to seeing miraculous fires. Throughout their sojourn in the desert, which is still ongoing, they saw fire every single night. Every single night. So you would think that naturally, there's a fire here, there's a fire there. Why does it matter? They shouldn't get so excited about it. But this is praising the Jewish people that despite them, you know, being accustomed to unnatural, miraculous fires representing Hashem's divine protection, nonetheless, they're appreciative of every single time they're able to see the fire. And each one was something unbelievable and a sight very much to see and to be inspired from, regardless. In a few days, it's not clear right now if we're going to actually experience it, but there's going to be a solar eclipse. I spoke about the halachas of that last night, whether you make a bracha on seeing a solar eclipse, and they are very infrequent. The next one in America that would be seen is in 2044, 20 years, in August, I think August 23rd. And you think about it, I'm like, what's the point? Am I getting into the science of this? But it's moments like that for me that help us appreciate the miracles of every single day. That the sun comes up and that we have nature and we have just a natural world each and every day that it's functioning normally within itself is an unbelievable miracle. That's really amazing. So it's those aberrations, those breaks in nature, so to speak, that help us appreciate what happens every single day in our world. And the Jewish people, they saw it, they experienced it. And for them, it was unbelievable. And they did not get accustomed to it. They appreciated every single time they saw things.
In other religions, there is a day that is dedicated to Hashem. Thanks to whoever they believe in as a deity. Like every day saying Moda Ami is really affirming. If someone just does that, doesn't chat either, I don't know, doesn't do a lot of other things, but just acknowledges when they wake up in the morning that it's they are waking up because of the Kadosh Baruch Hu and all that. You know, just to I'd be curious to know if any religion on a daily basis really acknowledges the gift that they're given on a daily basis.
Right. I'm sure there are on some level. I'm not sure how detailed it is.
Okay. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Okay. So we began with big karov, coming close to burying Nadav and Avihu. Idea number two was the unique approach to the death of Nadav and Avihu, how it came back. Number three was going into the Olmoi, coming out of. Shechina doesn't, you know, come on its own. We need to create it. Number four is appreciating, you know, all the things that we see in the world, the natural world. Number five, we're going to just shift to the end of the parasha. The end of the parasha talks about kashrus. And the Gemara, right, there are two different simanim for kashrus, for animals. And that is split hooves, shosa, shesa, and chukub, which is ma'ale gera. Those are the two simanim. The Gemara writes, has a term for a tzaddik, for somebody that is a all-around good person, a mensch. And what is that term? An adam kasher. And Rapam writes, that's like a funny term. You're a kosher guy. I think even in English today. Like, he's reliable, right? She's reliable. We could trust her. She's kosher. Not in kashrus, just in general. So he says maybe there's a deeper meaning to this. And he says that the two simanim reflect on two different areas of our avodas Hashem. Ma'ale gera, chewing one's cud, is completely internal. You wouldn't, maybe you could tell a little bit if you're an expert in animals, but you wouldn't necessarily know if an animal chews this cud on its own unless you were told or you Googled it today. It's completely internal. He says that represents our personal relationship to Hashem. The mitzvos that we do, bin Adam lamakom, that are completely private. It's between you and God. Only Hashem knows. And then you have split hooves. Shosa shesa, right? Everybody sees them. Truth is, we mentioned before, it's not so it's pretty complicated. Animals that we think are split hooves are not completely split. But nonetheless, it is something that's very, very much public for everybody to see. And that relates to how we interact with other people. Bein Adam l'chaveiro. And he says that sometimes there are people that are really amazing at serving Hashem and only Hashem. When it comes to serving your friends, they're terrible, right? Nobody wants to be around them. And there are some people that are the opposite. They're awesome at the chesed and the tzedakah, which is amazing. But when it comes to serving Hashem, that's not their cup of tea. We all need to be balanced. Right? If you have one siman kashrus, are you kosher? Do you have kosher? No. That's a camel, and that's a pig, and you're not kosher. Of course, we all have imperfections. It's not a question. Nobody here is perfect. But our job is to become balanced Jews. The Mabit points out the luchos, right? The first five luchos were Bein Adam l'makom. The second were Bein Adam l'chaveiro. And the Bein Adam l'chaveiro, they were all written in the same size stone. Stones were square. They weren't rounded on top. And if you think about it, there are a lot more words written on for the first five. The last five were two words or a few more per Dibra. So if you were the layout editor for the Luchos and you were writing them, what size font would the first be versus the second ones? What? Much smaller, right? Much smaller. And Rav Shechter points out from the Mabit, right point, Mabit says this, Rav Schechter likes to point out that why, when it comes to religion, some people feel the main thing is Beit HaMikdash. It's not a question, but yet. And they de-emphasize Beit HaMikdash. So the Luchos are being held up on Moshe Rabbeinu, right? They're there. The Beit HaMikdash is there, the first five. It's smaller. It's smaller. It comes more natural to people when it comes to serving Hashem. When it comes to be part of a religion. Beit Adon L'Chaveiro does not come as naturally as being part of Yiddishkeit. I'm a good guy. I'm a good girl. I'm a nice person. No question. But it's part of our avodas Hashem. And that's where the two luchos come to serve. And that maybe is the message, according to Rapam, of an Adam Kosher in the Gemara, Ma'ale Geira, the Shosas, Shesa, which reflect both of these notions. Okay, with that, yeah, I wish everybody a wonderful Shabbos. Yes? So, yes, so the Maharal writes there in the beginning of Parshas Vayera that how can it's a chutzpah? You're talking, Hashem's talking to you, and now you're talking to people. He says because Avram was the ultimate synthesis of both these ideas. Serving other people was serving Hashem. That doesn't mean you're allowed to talk to your friend during davening. Right, that's not. I don't think that's what Avram is doing. That's still not okay. That's not what Avram is doing. But when it comes to the context of Achnas Zorchim and having a nevuah, the people in front of you come first. That's part of serving Hashem. I want to wish everyone a wonderful.